Chapter 11. 3 days later, still not a word from Tony, and Steve was ready to tear his hair out. He hadn't hardly left the house, assuming, he thought reasonably, that Tony would blow off some steam and be back. They'd talk it out and then figure out a plan to deal with Stain. Completely reasonable. What normal people would do, he figured. Not that he had a lot of experience with his boyfriends? Okay, sure. Boyfriend's childhood father figure seeking to undermine him and steal his company, while also sabotaging what was apparently a still fragile relationship. There had been that one time his date got his coffee order wrong, but that probably was poor preparation. Steve sat on the sofa staring at the horizon and put his head in his hands. "Any word, Jarvis?" he asked. "Same as every day." "I'm sorry, sir. Sir has not communicated with me since the night of the dinner, except to make arrangements of which you are already aware," Jarvis responded. It felt oddly comforting to have something of a brother-in-arms when it came to being ignored by Tony, and he could swear the AI was sounding rather peeved. The arrangements, of course, concerned Steve's mom. That had been his one trip out, finding it rather nice to not have to worry about hiding where he was going Sunday afternoons. He wasn't sure if his mom's condition was improving, though the doctors seemed optimistic, but at least it wasn't continuing to deteriorate. He was amazed at how quickly you could go to measuring success in tiny, tiny increments. He stopped at the accounts department, unable to feign any moment of surprise, when the nice woman at the desk told him his mom's account had been taken care of. Because of course he had. He'd known that weeks ago. He kept running things over and over again in his head. He should have just told Tony about the situation early on. Put an end to this whole charade of a client relationship with Tony and let him know how he felt. Deep down, he'd known how Tony would react. He knew the man well enough at this point to realize that he would manage to take the information and turn it around in his head so that it was somehow something sorted that Tony could have just controlled if only he'd been a better person. For all his outward bravado, Tony rarely missed a chance to blame himself, if it was at all humanly possible. Steve couldn't understand why Tony did that to himself, when Tony was the most brilliant, wonderful, generous person he'd met. But he knew enough about Tony to know that Tony didn't see himself that way, couldn't see it that way, only saw how he'd failed, the things he'd missed, never what he'd actually accomplished. Which was why he'd planned to tell Tony when he could do so without the man flying off the handle about it. Instead, Tony gets to find out in the worst possible way. Because, of course, this was his life, he thought with a heavy sigh. After calling in to take the day off work on Monday, figuring, rightly as it turned out, that it wasn't like anyone was going to say anything to him about it, Steve decided to go ahead in the next day. It wasn't like he had anything else to occupy his time, and at least doing the painting gave him something to keep his thoughts from obsessing over Tony's whereabouts and what he wanted to tell him when Tony finally surfaced. At lunch, Steve walked down to a small park near the construction site and sat on a shaded bench to eat his lunch. He was somehow completely unsurprised when Tony plopped down next to him halfway through his sandwich. Tony didn't immediately say anything, so Steve just bided his time, giving Tony a moment to decide how to proceed. He knew he should probably give Tony hell for running off like that. Honestly, though, Steve was too happy to see Tony to manage much in the way of righteous indignation. He shifted on the bench to angle his body towards Tony, taking in the man's appearance. He was, of course, dressed in an expensive suit, but his hair was mussed and he'd taken his sunglasses off. He was leaning back against the bench, hand tapping a staccato rhythm against the arc reactor in his chest. Steve wondered if he realized what he was doing. Tony was scanning the park, studiously refusing to look in Steve's direction. That night when I... He vaguely waved his hand. "Was mistaken about you and Bucky." Steve nodded, surprised by the lead-in. He wasn't sure where Tony was going with this. "You said..." You said that it wasn't about the money. You just like being with me, Tony repeated. And yeah, Steve did remember that, though still couldn't see how this was related. It obviously was in Tony's mind, though, so he just waited it out. I hated hearing that from you. I knew it was a line, something you're told to say to clients so they don't feel guilty about what they're doing. I didn't want to think of myself that way, Tony went on. You're not, Steve started, turning more towards Tony and vehemently shaking his head. But Tony ignored him and continued on, seemingly talking to the park at large. I thought I was above that, a better person than those other people that would just use you. But the truth is, I knew from that first night that you wouldn't be doing this without being absolutely desperate. Maybe some people could and just enjoy the money, but not you. I knew that, but I let myself keep on with it anyway. Told myself, whatever it was, I was helping, after all, right? Making it easier, right? God, what a crock of shit. Never let it be said I can't thoroughly delude myself when I really want to. Tony, you can't. I never said, Steve tried to cut in. Tony just shook his head. I could have pressed, Steve. Or just found out on my own. Obi did. The truth is, I didn't want to know because I knew whatever it was. This would have to stop if I knew. And I'm just that selfish when it comes down to it. I'm a fixer, Steve. That's what I do. Make things better, take something and improve it. But I knew if I fixed you, you could leave me. And I'm that much of a son of a bitch. Tony was still resolutely studying the food truck, refusing to look at Steve, which was driving Steve crazy. Steve sucked in a breath, trying to follow Tony's logic. The man was brilliant, but that came with certainty that wasn't always warranted, at least not when it came to Steve. Tony, this was my choice. There is nothing here that was your fault. And you did help. Not just the money, but, well, everything. You have no idea what just being with you did for me, Steve said, feeling his chest constrict at Tony's words. Of course, Tony would find a way to blame himself, because Steve's life managed to land him in a situation without a lot of good options. And why not? Tony controlled the universe, right? At least he seemed to think he should, as evidenced by the whole work apartment situation. Maybe it was a choice for some, Steve, but don't pretend it was for you. It was something you felt you had to do when there was nothing left to try because you'd sacrifice anything for the people you care about. But a choice? That night, that first night, Steve, you didn't want to be there. I knew that. I knew that, but I did it anyway. I took advantage of your desperation, Tony breathed, voice shaking, and that kills me, Steve. That's not fair, Tony, Steve interrupted. I could have taken that away from you that night, right then and there, and the money wouldn't have been anything to me. But I chose not to because I wanted you too badly. If I could go back, I should have just demanded you tell me why that first night, taken you to dinner like a normal person, gotten your number, but no, couldn't do that, could I, selfish bastard that I am? You were so bright, and everything had been dark for so long. I'd been out of that godforsaken cave for 2 years, but that was the first time it had felt like it. And I wasn't strong enough to do the right thing, even if it meant hurting you, he finished harshly, self-loathing evident in his voice. You're trying to put this all on your shoulders, Tony, but I was the one that made the decision to do this. It was my choice, and you're trying to take that away from me and twist it up into something for you to feel guilty about. But that wasn't anything to do with you, Tony. Lots of people have to make decisions without many options. That doesn't mean they aren't responsible for their own choices. And it was hardly your responsibility to see all that the first night we met and decide to fix it. You're looking to blame yourself for something that you had no control over, and I'm not going to let you do that, Steve said resolutely. Steve took a deep breath. The truth is that after that first night, I decided I was done with this. I told Ms. Romanoff that when she called, but then she said you wanted me back that night, and I found myself saying yes. Not because of the money, Tony. I'm not going to pretend I didn't use that to justify it in my head, or that it didn't make life easier, but the truth is, I wanted to see you again. If Romanoff had said any other name, I'd have been done with this. I told her that. But when she said it was you, I wanted to go back. I told myself it was the money. But if that had been it, then anyone would have done. I wanted to be with you, Steve tried to explain. So please stop blaming yourself for my choices. That first night, I was a lot of things. Nervous, embarrassed, and, well, a lot of things. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to be there that night. I could have left, and I knew you'd have paid me the night's money without going further if I'd asked it. But I didn't. You're so busy blaming yourself, you don't see that I wanted you too. Steve was practically shouting now. You want to take me out of this whole equation and put it all on you. I'm not going to let you do that to yourself, and I'm not going to let you reduce me to someone who can't make his own decisions or take responsibility for them. A long moment passed in silence between them. Steve had no idea what was running through Tony's mind at this point. He knew he should make Tony talk to more about the situation between them, but couldn't resist asking about the elephant in the proverbial room. Tony, what about Stain? What he said about the board? Can they really do that? Take the company away because of us? Tony just waved his hand dismissively. Maybe they could have made noise, but they won't, not now. Obi. Well, it turns out that he'd been laying the foundation for this, having me removed anyway, for a while. I was too out of it to notice, I guess. And anyway, he may have been onto something, but the phrase hoisted on his own petard comes to mind. There were some videos that surfaced as part of a federal investigation into another matter. His resignation will be effective tomorrow. Whatever he'd been feeding the board, they aren't likely to listen to him now. The more distance they can put between him and the company, the better. Steve tried to feign ignorance about the videos Tony was likely talking about. He wasn't sure he pulled it off, but Tony didn't press the point. Steve couldn't help but feel a huge sense of relief. He'd been so afraid he'd cost Tony the company he loved. Besides, there isn't much the board could really do anyway. I own a controlling interest in the company, so effectively control elections to the board. Stain was just messing with you to get to me, Tony said darkly. Steve heard him take in a deep, steadying breath. Don't worry about Stain, Steve. He won't be bothering us again. That much I can promise you, at least. Finally, Steve decided he'd had enough. They both wished they'd handled things differently from the beginning. Seemed the best way to deal with that was to try again, do it right this time. He just hoped if he went out on the limb, Tony would follow. He stuck out his hand toward Tony. Hi, I'm Steve Rogers. I'm 25 and a part-time art student in New York. I work odd jobs in between, usually in construction or painting. About 4 months ago, I got a phone call that my mother had been hit by a car as she walked across a crosswalk and was in intensive care with something they called a traumatic brain injury. I took the bus out here and crashed on my best friend's sofa for a bit while I tried to figure things out. Turns out, even after insurance, there were a stack of bills to pay off, and Mom didn't have much in the way of savings from her waitress job. The only ongoing care insurance would cover was in a county hospital for long-term care, and when I visited there, I thought I'd rather do just about anything than leave her there to die slowly while I went on with my life. But I had no idea what to do about it. My best friend Bucky got me a job with the company he works for, and I did as many extra shifts as I could, but it wasn't enough. Not by a long shot. I got pretty desperate as the hospital started pressuring me to move her to a long-term facility. Bucky's roommate Clint mentioned an option that he'd used in the past when he was short on cash. It was one of those seemed like a good idea at the time things, but when I met my first client, I panicked. Then I met this amazing guy at a party, and he was wonderful and kind and funny and passionate and so brilliant that I just wanted to stop and listen and just be in his space, even if I had no idea what he was saying. I didn't know how to tell him that I wanted him, not his money, but also desperately needed his money. I kept trying to make that sound right, but couldn't get there. And then he had this big presentation, and I didn't want to burden him, so I waited, or let myself wait. I don't know who I was doing that for, him or me. But then it all went to hell. And now I think he blames himself for something that was completely not his fault, that he only made better in so many ways. And I don't know how to get him to believe that, except to tell him how much I love him and hope he believes me. Steve finished and left the silence hang between them. He had no idea how Tony was going to react to all that. Information dump may not have been the best relationship repair strategy after all. "Hi, I'm Tony Stark. I'm older," Tony said, slowly shaking Steve's hand, and Steve rolled his eyes because he had Googled after all. "I run a very successful company and I hate what it does. I spend my time coming up with new technologies that I don't use. Most days, it is all I can do to get out of bed, breathe in and out, and put one foot in front of the other. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I just exist. Or I did. Then I met this amazing guy at a party, and he was funny and sweet and kind, and he made me feel like I could do anything. He was so convincing of this that I finally decided to change the whole focus of my company into something I could actually believe in. And I fell in love with him so completely and totally that I might have overreacted a bit when I thought he loved someone else. But then, amazingly enough, he said he didn't. But I told myself he was only with me because he had to be. And if I took that away, if I fixed that, he'd leave me. And I was too selfish to let that happen, so I didn't fix it and let him keep having to worry about it. And I'm afraid that if I tell him that, he'll hate me and won't understand how deeply, irrevocably in love with him I am. And that I was just terrified that he'd leave me if I didn't make myself indispensable. Because why wouldn't he? Everyone does, and he could have anyone. They sat like that for a while, neither speaking, just letting their words hang between them. Finally, Steve cleared his throat. "So, Tony Stark, would you like to have a drink with me?" Steve asked, nodding his head in the direction of the food truck. "I hear that's how it's done these days." "I would be delighted to have a drink with you, Steve Rogers," Tony said with a small, enigmatic smile. They rose together and walked tentatively over to the food truck. 2 bottles of water, please," Steve ordered. He turned to see Tony looking rather alarmed and patting down the front of his suit. "I don't think I actually have any cash on me," Tony said, chagrined. "Well," Steve said, the word a drawl. He looked Tony up and down with exaggerated appraisal. "I think we might be able to work something out." Tony's bark of laughter was reward enough as Steve paid for the water. "I actually have to get back to work," Steve said with a frown. He didn't really want to leave Tony to his own devices at this point, afraid he'd just end up overthinking everything again. Tony stopped and turned to him, clasping his hands onto Steve's upper arms in a semblance of a hug. Steve, you know, we just had our big declaration moment, right? Right there, he indicated the bench. Like, just a minute ago. So, when I say this, please know that I say this with all the love in my heart. Okay, Steve responded. Hun, you're fired. You're like so incredibly fired. Fired, 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 Tony said, shaking his head in mock sadness. I can get hundreds of painters. There's only one you. And if you think I'm letting you go back to work after that. Tony, Steve tried, but it came out in a laugh and he knew he was so screwed. I've never been fired before. Embrace it, own it, Tony said, grinning madly. Besides, there's a hell of a severance package, he leered. Steve just shook his head, shoulders shaking with laughter. Incorrigible, he accused. That's eccentric, I told you, Tony reminded him, grabbing his arm and pulling him along. He looked up and noticed Happy waiting with the car in the distance. I just have one more question, Tony said, taking a long swallow from his water bottle. Why does that Clint guy keep sending me an Evite for a hot tub time machine party? Steve choked on his water and turned bright red. I'll explain when we get home, he managed in a strangled voice. Damn it, Clint, he thought, flushing with embarrassment. I think I look forward to it, Tony said with a grin.